Hey everyone, welcome to my podcast, Insights by Ben Siegel. The name of the podcast was based on the idea and notion that every episode will have one insight or one nugget of knowledge after hearing from our guest. I'm Ben Siegel, Managing Director of Private Wealth at UBS Financial Services. Our team, Connor Siegel Partners, is based in New York City, Miami, and Boston. After the podcast, I can be reached at benjamin.siegel@ubs.com. Today, our guest is Yuping Hang, is the CEO of Quantum Computing. Yuping, a big welcome.
Thank you, Ben.
Dr. Wang is the CEO of Quantum Computing, appointed on a permanent basis effective January 1st, 2026. After serving interim CEO and chief quantum officer, he's a pioneer researcher in quantum optics, integrated photonics, focusing on making quantum technology practical, room temperature, and accessible. He's also founded the Center for Quantum Science and Engineering at Stephen Institute of Technology. Welcome again. So, Yuping, how will quantum computing change the world?
That's a big question, Ben. So, to be honest, I know that quantum computing will change the world. I can think about some ways, but the future is much bigger than what I can possibly think about. So I believe that quantum computing will take the machine intelligence to a new level. That actually, if you think about it, Ben, it could be a little bit scary.
They're all scary.
Yes.
And but the future is advancing.
Yes, the future is advancing, and I believe that quantum will transform the ways how information is captured, transmitted, computed, processed, interpreted. I believe that quantum computing will push the scientific discovery to a new level because, hey, we have enormous computing power now. We can simulate a lot of things and that we can easily find solutions that the classical machines may take millions of years to find or not be able to find at all. In fact, so the concept of quantum computing was proposed, I believe, initially by Professor Richard Feynman. And at that time, so the physicists pretty much know that the universe is probably run by quantum mechanics.
Correct.
And the classical machines is too inefficient to simulate what's happening in the nature. So his great idea was that why don't we build a quantum computer to simulate what's happening in the quantum world? This is all the magic started. And now, going back to your question, Ben, so I believe that in some ways, quantum computers will help us understanding who we are or what we are.
Well, that would be great because I really like to know who I am and where I'm from. It seems like it will answer a lot of questions that would take computing enormous amount of time. So one fact that I heard is that if you go from the beginning of time to today to try to solve a problem that's unsolvable, that in quantum computers, you can do it within 5 minutes.
For some particular problems.
Right.
Yeah, but not all problems. A common misunderstanding is that quantum computers are going to solve all the problems and wipe all other types of computers off the table. That's not true. and it will never happen. Quantum computers are very good at solving certain problems that are either very challenging or inaccessible by classical computers.
Right.
So yes, there are some problems that a quantum computer can solve like 1 million times faster, 1 billion times faster. But there are also lots of problems that we're having now that quantum computers cannot solve at all.
Right. So I want to, so the quantum is really computing at an unbelievable scale with multiple variables at the same time to come up with some potential solution, whether it's optimization or crypto. But I want to go back in time to see how you got here. Can we go back and discuss your childhood a little bit? You were born in China, and it's to me, your story is one of the most fascinating stories I've ever heard.
I'm not sure if I agree with that or not. I'm just a very small story, but I'm more than happy to share with you. Yeah, indeed, I was born in a actually very poor village in South China. So we grow rice, you know, but that's very intensive labor. And when I was young, like 4 or 5 years old, I had to take care of a water buffalo. So that was my job. That was like 10 times taller, enormous. She was very gentle, and we had a lot of fun actually. So we swam in the water. So my memories from my childhood. So very poor family, but I was very happy. And at that time, so I learned to start to make something fun using bamboos. And so then after I got to school, I realized that I'm a little bit weird. So that many of my classmates, they were able to comprehend what the teacher said very quickly. And I struggled a lot. And I did not know why at the time, and I actually was very frustrated. And then, so as I took more and more class, I realized that I cannot accept anything without understanding it first.
Well, I wish more people were like you. I gotta tell you.
So when teacher threw out some concept, right, and I was busy trying to understand it, and of course, so. It took me so long, and I really struggled when I was young. But then I realized that actually, when I went into the middle school, I realized that, wait, how can I be so stupid but understand more than most of my classmates? And so then I start to enjoy the way of learning by really understanding it.
Right.
This is how I get to physics. And in fact, Ben, I have to tell you that when I was a student in high school, I did very badly on chemistry. Because
it's hard to believe.
I could not understand how reaction happens. The teachers just give you an equation to tell you that you mix this and that, and you get a new chemical. So my reaction was that why? Because as I told you, I just refused. I always refuse to accept anything, try to memorize anything without understanding, and I'm actually. I feel very grateful that there is a subject called physics that will really allow you to spend time to understand, and actually in many ways require you to understand. So that's why I love physics. And
that's interesting.
And now getting to quantum, and so I can tell you that I was fascinated by quantum the first day I touched the textbook. That was in 1999.
So, and you were still in high school?
No, so that was the first semester.
In university?
In college.
Right. Now, to get to college from where you live, you had to take a national exam. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
And so I guess that exam must not be easy, and you got a lot of competition. So yeah. You must have done okay on that exam.
I guess I did okay. Actually, so such a exam, I think it...
Were you number one in the country or
no,
in the top?
No, but definitely top in the province.
Right.
So otherwise you cannot possibly get chance to get to the top universities. In fact, so we had an exam like for 2.5 days, and everything is determined by the score of exam. It
right.
does not care who you are.
Or who you know. It's a meritocracy.
We know, yes. And it is brutal, but when I look back, I realize that it is certainly not a perfect system, but it is probably the best system that allow people from a poor family
uh-huh.
to be able to find a good education opportunity.
Right.
And I'm very grateful for that.
Got it. Yeah. And so you spent 5 years in university?
Yep.
And then you decided to come to the U.S.?
Yes.
And how did that come about?
Yep. So, in fact, you know, Ben, in most universities in the States or in China, so it's the 4-year bachelor program. But the physics program I was in was 5 years. So it was designed purposely for people to have a lot of opportunities to spend in the labs. And that's what I did. So I actually spent a lot of time in a lab, and I enjoyed it. And at the time, I realized that, geez, I cannot do anything else but physics. So this is how I started to look, say, okay, so what should I do in the future? So at the time, actually, I was very fascinated by cold atom physics, like people call quantum AMO physics, and so the physics in that particular area, and I think in many other areas, it's the best in the States.
Right.
So that's why I came here and spent another 5 years getting my PhD in quantum AMO physics. Now, the turning point actually came after I got my PhD, because at the time, I know that I love physics a lot, and I will spend my lifetime studying physics, but I realized that I'm not very smart, and so I cannot become the next Einstein, so actually I struggled for quite a bit time that so now what I do, I have to make myself useful.
That's I would agree,
right?
On that, yeah.
But I will not be able to make grand contribution to the theory of quantum physics.
Right.
But I still love quantum physics. what I do. So then I actually had a 180 degree turn that I told myself that, well, so since I'm not smart enough to make groundbreaking discovery in the physics itself, I can at least make myself useful by turn physics into technology, to put physics into work for people. So this is actually so why, although my PhD was on theoretical quantum physics, my postdoc was on the experimental quantum optics.
Got it.
That was a sharp term.
Experimental and, quantum optics.
Yes, and so this is where I started to learn how to do experiment with quantum photonics. And I was pretty brave at the time because it totally changed the field, right? But I was very fortunate that to have worked with a prominent research group and got chance to learn the skills. And then actually I found later that the ideas that I had in the atomic, in the quantum optics theory actually can be applied. So then I started to have a lot of fun again. So that's my 5 year in bachelor, 5 year in PhD, another 5 year in postdocs.
Postdoctorate, yeah.
Yes.
In optics, quantum optics.
And in 2014, so I moved to Stevens Institute of Technology, and where I started to build my own group, and with actually one main objective to turn what I have learned over the previous 15 years into a reasonable device form. So when at Northwestern, when I did my postdoc, so we had a lot of fun in the lab, but those are on the like 5 feet by 12 feet optical table,
right.
Huge ones, and you have to lay a lot of mirrors,
right.
Lenses, and so we had a lot of fun, but every day I tell myself that, great, you enjoy it, but how can this help others?
Right, so you enjoy it, but you were figuring out how it could help others.
Yes, so this is why very soon after I came to Stevens, we started to develop the quantum photonic integrated circuits.
Okay, quantum photonic integrated circuits.
Yes, and with the goal of shrinking the optical table.
Right, making it smaller.
Make it like inch square chips.
From a table to inches.
Yes. Because, of course, nobody is going to buy a huge optical table to see the magic of quantum, however right. magical it is. So this is the focus at Stevens.
So you were at the lab, you shrunk everything down, and then you decided after 5 years that you were going to do what?
So, yep. So I feel that it is time to bring the technology to industry, and because what we have developed is very complex, And
yes, and I will agree with you. Quantum fiber optics or optics mechanics is quite complex.
Yeah. In fact,
everyone in the world has been saying that, and they don't believe that. There's some people who believe that can't be done, but it is.
Yeah. So what happened was that actually, we wrote some patents, but for a couple of years, so we left the patent, and I know that it will change the world, but nobody was interested in that. So Ben, you know me, so I'm always the guy that, okay, so if somebody has to get stuff done, so if there's nobody there, I will be the guy. So then after a talk with a university, I decided to found a small startup called QPhoton. So we did some preliminary product R&D, and in 2022, we merged with Quantum Computing Inc.
Right.
So before 2022, Quantum Computing Inc. was a quantum software company with the goal of developing software to run programs on other commercial platforms for quantum computing.
So they were going to use other software to run quantum computing. And then when you came in with Quantum Photon, the merger,
yeah,
then you decided what?
It is really not what I decided. And so everybody in the company, including the board, they saw that the true potential of what we do in the quantum photonic hardware, including the chips. And
so you make the hardware and the chips?
Yes, and as such, so actually, so Quantum Computing Inc. gradually phased out the software line of business. And in fact, right now we're purely quantum photonic hardware company.
So there is a couple of life lessons that I'm learning here right now. First, if you get clarity, which happens rarely, right? When you made the switch to photonics, you decided, you know, that is something that I have an opportunity. But the more important thing is you decided to take the risk. So once you have clarity, taking the risk, you have a better shot, and I think that's phenomenal. That's the only way people I've found have been successful. And the other thing that you said that I found fascinating is the more you learn, the less you know. and I tell that to my kids, that the more you learn, the less you know, because
yeah, there's
an infinite amount to know.
Yeah.
So fast forward to today, you're the CEO of a quantum company. You have 200 employees, and you hear about quantum all the time. What should companies be thinking about with regard to quantum?
I think all companies need to think about a lot, but the most important is that why we are here. No company should come to existence by having a cool name.
Right.
I believe that every company, quantum companies included, all should bear a mission of create value.
Right.
Create value for customers, consumers, enterprises, and to humankind or to the planet. So
I agree.
Right now, when people think about quantum computing, so most people will think, oh, great, it is cool. And That's fine.
Yeah.
But quantum companies should not feel happy for being in a cool business.
Right, right.
We needed to be measured by the industry, by the consumers, by our customers.
Right.
By what's the value we create.
Right. And what the way I look at it is, it's just like what I do as a living, there's a need and you have a solution for a particular need.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's optimization, if you're a cargo company and you're flying a million different locations, crew, staff, everything that you need, that you could use a quantum software or your hardware to find what is the most optimal, right?
Yep. And, this is one application that
right.
We can help with.
And with regard to quantum, you're really focused on two things, optimization, right, and cybersecurity?
Actually, so those are the two very important business lines.
Right.
But we also have the quantum sensing, where we utilize the quantum effects with optics and enhance, say, our sensing precision, our sensing distance, sensitivity.
Right.
And on the another line is that this actually has less to do with quantum, more to do with photonics, which is we are trying to get lots of information processing done in the photonics domain for AI, for
okay.
neural networks, so that we can offload some otherwise very computationally intense,
right.
very energy-hungry calculations from digital processes such as GPU or CPU to the photonic domain with the goal of reducing the energy consumption, reducing the heat deposition problem. So basically, so we wanted to make AI much lower cost. So that is more on the photonic side, and quantum can play a role, but even without using quantum, so that can also already help AI a lot.
Right, and so if it's lower cost and you're really increasing the efficiency and productivity of AI is one of the things.
Yeah.
And when you say photonics, so our listeners understand, can you explain what that means? When, because I don't think a lot of people really understand photonics and the different way other people are trying to do quantum computing.
Right, so well, so the reason that Ben, you can see me is that that light emits lots of photons,
yeah.
the bounce of me,
right.
and the sun get to your eyes. And so this is really, photonics is really anything to do with light. And then the reason that we can utilize the light for information processing is that you can really have many different ways to modulate the light. So in terms of the color, the waveform, right, the precision, so all those are in the domain of photonics. But of course, when we use photonics for quantum computing, actually, so you will need a very special sources and have very demanding devices to guide the light and to...
So they connect.
Connect and to make the photons interact. So by the way, so Ben, when I say photons, a photon is an elementary particle of light. That's the smallest energy unit of light. And typically, so a photon has an energy of about 10 to the negative 19 joule. Just to give you some idea, that light there,
yes,
they emit about 10 to the maybe 22 photons per second.
Quite a bit.
And we just, we need one of the 10 to the 22 photons to carry information and interact.
So one little piece of photon will connect information that will really change a lot of things of how we think about it.
Yeah. So this is why we're so excited about the prospect of introducing photonics to AI. If you think about it, if I have a few photons acting as neurons.
Okay.
By turning on the 1 watt light bulb.
Right. Right.
So you have 10 to 20 photons generate per second. Now, that means that you can run a massive neural network with 1 watt power.
So you would be able to get immense amount of compute power on very little energy.
That's right. And really compute at the speed of light, bam. At the speed of light, the computation is done by passing a beam of light here to here through some medium.
What would be the moment when you realize it all works on a grander scale? Is there a moment that you're waiting for?
Ben, that's a very dangerous question, because everything what we're doing now at QSI, they have appeared in my dreams for so many times. To a point that I may lose the boundary between reality and the dreams. So I can tell you that I've been thinking about the technology, how the light, how the photons are routed and interact on the chip. I have thought about them for a million times. So
you envisioned it. Now it's taking, and which I always say is the most important thing about business. There's a lot of people with ideas, but there's few people who can execute.
Right, yes. Ideas themselves are cheap.
Right.
Let's just be honest. Ideas are not expensive. But turning an idea into a device is enormous. And for that to happen, you first needed to turn your idea into a set of equations, maybe long equations, and then from equations, you have to do an experiment to make sure that you don't make mistake in understanding those equations. So after you verify each equation, right, you will need to build your system to test that, okay, not only the individual equations work, but when you lump them all together,
right,
the system works. And so soon you will be looking at a huge experiment with hundreds of optics on a big table. So now you finally get some results that agree with what your dream tells you. Great, you feel very happy, but this is not end. That this is a start of the journey. So the next step is that, okay, how to put all those in a reasonable hardware footprint to realize the technology in the device. This is what's happening at QCII now.
Right.
And from idea to equations, each equations and test, most of them have happened over the past 10, 15 years. And
right.
In the hands of generations of my students. And now, so lots of engineering work and manufacturing work should have to happen.
So, I hear a lot about the quantum advantage. What is a tangible problem in finance, logistics, or defense that your quantum devices can solve today that classical computers cannot?
Right. So currently, so the QCII's quantum computing hardware so can solve pretty complex optimization problem, either those of binary or integer, or in some cases, continuous variable problems. And we have started to build our gate-based model. So now the problems that we can solve now, yes, the really all kinds of different optimization problems. So you mentioned the
cargo company,
the air cargo, yeah. and we have seen that our machines are also very good at solving the portfolio optimization problem and the placement of sensors, all kinds of different optimization problems. But I wanted to clarify that as of now, our commercial product is only good at solving optimization problem.
Optimization.
Yes, not other problems. But
right.
We also know that the optimization problem and correspond to huge market.
Right. One of the other things that you hear a lot about is that you need cold temperatures for the photons and quantum to work, but your strategy is completely different.
Yep.
You're looking, at room temperature.
Yep.
And you want to have your quantum ubiquitous, so it's in a billion devices.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yep. In fact, so there are different material platforms to quantum computing and quantum information processing. And the reason that we choose the photonics approach is that we can make room temperature quantum devices. And so this is opposite to those based on the, say, superconductors, trapped ions, or trapped atoms. And so the reason is that the per particle energy of photon is way above the thermal energy of the Earth. So we are actually living in a nice room temperature. So this is about 300 Kelvin. So the per photon energy is way above that. That means that we can get a lot of some stuff done here while not being bothered by the, for example, black body radiation. So we can have our devices work perfectly fine at a room temperature. And I think it is important. It is important, as I said, Ben, so the North Star guiding everything what we do at QCI is to put quanta into the hands of billions. This is my dream. This is what I decided to do after I realized that I'm not smart. So at least this is something I can do, I can help with. So it is very important for us to pay attention to the final product. Everything what we do must lead to a small, inexpensive, and robust, and widely adoptable quantum product.
So you have a mission that's very clear, straightforward, which is very helpful, I think. And if everyone has it in the device, they will have some exceptional computing power.
Yes.
And I could imagine that will make people smarter or not. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, so we can definitely make a machine smarter.
Right.
Much, much smarter than the machine that we have now.
Right.
Does quantum make people smarter? I don't know. Most likely no, because actually, just let me ask you this question, Ben. Did smartphones make human smarter?
They made them more aware of things and help things make their lives a little easier. For example, getting directions.
Yeah.
So does it make them smarter intellectually? That would be, you know, they could have more answers. They have a walking encyclopedia in their hand.
Yeah.
But do they understand? That's to be determined.
Definitely more information, more option.
Right.
But smarter, I don't know. So now, what quantum can do is that quantum can bring enormous computing power to the fingertip of human. So then, will this make human beings smarter, more intelligent, or the other way? I don't know. And
So this is the last question I want to leave with. When you reflect back on being a small child in a remote village in southern China, being in the tri-state area in New York and doing something that's probably one of the most sophisticated things to do, as you reflect back, what do you think got you here that you had that maybe other people didn't have?
That's a very deep question, Pam. So, in fact, there are many, many times that I ask myself that, what am I doing here? Okay, I actually have a older brother who stayed in the village in the south part of China, stayed as a farmer. So when I looked at him, so I was wondering that what if I swap my life with his, you know? So will I be happier? Then maybe yes, maybe no. So, but what really keep me going is that so it takes enormous fortune for so many atoms to have come together to have formed me. And I don't think those atoms will give me another chance to form me again in the future.
Right.
This is my shot. I needed to make myself useful to others in some way. And I think I should feel happy if through our joint effort, people will not view quantum as odd, as spooky, or as cold, but people can really start to use quantum technology without knowing that they are using quantum. It is
right.
Just like Ben, so there are so many people spending actually a little bit too much time on the phone, but
I would say so.
They don't think that there are billions of transistors inside the phone.
Right.
And if we can get to the stage where people will use, when I say people, I'm talking about over 7 billion people on the Earth use quantum without have to think that, it's quantum inside. If I can help achieving that, I would call it not a too bad life.
It would be a contribution, a great legacy. But one of the lessons that I'm learning from you, and I feel the same way, and I think this has helped a lot of young people, once you find a passion and then you have a knack for it, you should pursue it, because that will give you happiness, doing things that you enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, yeah, all the people that I've met that have been successful, they're really passionate about what they do. They really enjoy it. Thank you, Yuping. I want to thank our audience for listening to Insights by Ben Siegel. Looking forward to our next conversation.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.